Hello and welcome to DGT Radio, DGT's knowledge sharing podcast, exploring themes and topics that are relevant to our everyday work. Malta. Slightly more than 500,000 inhabitants and a unique and intriguing language. Today, Antoinette Camilleri from the University of Malta tells us about the tumultuous history of the Maltese language and explains how it has developed since it became an official language of the European Union 20 years ago, in a country that is thoroughly multilingual. But let's start with the poem which Antoinette chose for us.
Aċaħna l-koll mil-bahar ġejna, mil-kurrenti, mil-limbat, mil-iħ, mil-lilma. Min hemm ġejna? Bil-kurdun tal-identità u bis-sekonda. Stajna zilna l-kapriċċ tal-imħabba. Imma zilna fajl maluq.
Hello, Antoinette Camilleri.
Hello.
Antoinette, thank you for accepting my invitation to talk to DGT Radio about the Maltese language.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's really a pleasure, and I'm really, really looking forward to knowing more about the Maltese language, because I think it's a beautiful language, and I think a lot of us are really quite curious about it, because we can hear, you know, that it comes from different places and that it's such a nice mixture of languages.
It's normal for linguists to be very interested in it because it's so unique.
Antoinette, you are a professor of applied linguistics at the University of Malta.
Yes, yes.
And your main areas of research, just interrupt me if I'm saying anything wrong, but it is the teaching of Maltese to native and non-native speakers, bilingualism in education, and intercultural competence.
Precise, yeah? Yes.
Okay, I got it right, yeah. And what I know for sure is that you actually taught Maltese to a group of DGT colleagues some years ago.
Yes, my hello to them in case they are listening. And even recently, I have also taught another group of employees of the European Commission, including a couple of translators who are now at level 6. So again, my regards to them if they are listening. By the way, I worked for some years also as a translator at the council. So I am... I can appreciate the work of translators firsthand.
Now, Antoinette, we have just heard a poem in Maltese that you chose for us so that we could have a taste of the Maltese language. And I know that you like this poem particularly. Could you tell us why in a few words?
Sure. So that's the poem entitled Ship Afina by Adrian Grima, a contemporary poet. It's about our cold reaction to thousands of immigrants who are losing their lives, which is an almost daily plight on our Maltese shores in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. As a Maltese language educator, I feel it is my duty to raise awareness among teachers and learners who feel quite at a loss when surrounded with so many non-Maltese speaking children in class. Mm-hmm. This was one of the poems that I used together with my colleague from the Università di Udine, Mattia Mantellato, in order to create a multimodal production with the aim of stimulating reflection about how our linguistic identity, that is the Maltese language, is a witness to how the Maltese nation evolved through the centuries, because a variety of cultures from the east, the north, and the south reached our shores, and those people set up home here. In fact, in the poem, one can notice the makeup of the Maltese language. There are Semitic words like Bahar, Ilma, Imhabba, Ahna, Stajna, Zilna, Romance words like Kurrenti, Identita, Gurdung, Seconda, Capricci, and even the English word file.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so you just mentioned it, how the Maltese language is a mixed language, and in this sense, it's very unique. As you said, it has Arabic roots, and it has been deeply influenced by the Italian language, by the English language, and to a lesser extent, by the French language. I'm mentioning it because I'm French, so.
Okay. For sure, there is one word, cacahuète, from cacahuète.
Oh, yeah,
It is
right.
French.
At least we gave you the cacahuète. Okay. So it is considered as a Semitic language, even though it is very distinct from today's other Semitic languages like modern Arabic. Huh?
Yes, very
And
much.
And in a sense, it's also a Romance language with more than 50% of its vocabulary related to Romance languages like Italian, as we said. And also it's written in the Latin alphabet. Some people might not know about that.
Yeah.
But so to understand this rich and complex heritage, I feel we need to know a bit more about the history of Malta and also about its geography. Because I know that you believe that to understand a language and its people, you need to understand the geography of their country. So what can you tell us about the geography of Malta in a few words?
You're right, because this is certainly true for Malta, that the geography and the history are fundamental to understand the language. Now, first of all, Malta is made up of two inhabited islands and a few smaller uninhabited ones. The population of Malta is just over 500,000, and the size of the islands is about 300 kilometers squared. So in physical sense, it's very small. And this makes it one of the most densely populated countries in the world. Malta throughout the ages has been colonized, even though so small, thanks to its sheltered harbors. The earliest written inscriptions we have date back to the Phoenicians, who were traders. So obviously they traveled and found shelter in Malta. And later on, several other dominating powers reached our shores and stayed here for several centuries, with their language becoming part of our language over time. For example, after the Phoenicians, we know that there were the Carthaginians and then the Romans, and then Malta was part of the Byzantine Empire. So after a Semitic language like Phoenician, there were Latin and Greek used for a few hundred years. And then again, the Arabs took over between the 8th century and the 11th century after Christ. In fact, linguists explain that Maltese has a substratum of Arabic dating back to the Arabic period. But then this was again followed by the Norman conquest, which reintroduced linguistic, cultural, and religious elements from the European mainland. In 1530, the Knights of St. John arrived in Malta and were here until 1798.
Mm-hmm.
So that
the
was
Knights of Malta, sorry, I'm just interrupting, because in French is l'Ordre de Malte, l'Ordre des Chevaliers de Malte. And
yes.
In English, we say the Knights of St. John. We don't say the Order of Malta, or?
Yes, it's the same. It's the same order.
Right, okay.
But
okay.
Because they were in Malta for 300 years, they have become known as the Order of Malta. But
right.
Their original name is the Order of St. John of Jerusalem, in fact.
Okay.
And that was a very important linguistic and cultural period for Malta. Because they were like, in a way, like the European Union, because they were divided into 8 languages.
Wow, already? Right.
Yes,
okay.
They were coming from Europe at that time, was subdivided into Italy, France, Provence, Auvergne, Aragon, Castile, Germany, and England. And each of these had what was called a language, which was... They even in Valletta had their own auberge, which they still exist.
Mm-hmm.
And they spoke mainly French and Italian and obviously used Latin in writing. So Maltese at that time acquired what is referred to as a Romance stratum
mm-hmm.
that continued to be strengthened almost to this day, because then even when the knights left, And Napoleon was here for just 2 years, and it wasn't a very successful takeover, actually, because
It didn't last long.
no, and they were under siege for the 2 years, so we won't go into the details. Lord Nelson from Britain was invited by the Maltese to take over Malta in 1800,
So
and
it was not an invasion. He was invited.
he was invited,
Oh,
yes,
wow.
because the
Okay.
Maltese were thoroughly fed up and angry at Napoleon, because Napoleon had stolen all the riches
Okay.
in order to fund his battles. So, yes, the British were invited in order to get rid of Napoleon and his stuff. And during the first 100 years of the British period, actually, there were many Italian coming over to Malta, and Italian was more important than English for a very long time, even under British rule. But then eventually, of course, English took over, especially as it became an international language. So, and then thanks to the media, television, and so on. So now in Maltese, we also find an adstratum of English loanwords in our vocabulary.
All right. Thank you for this geographical and historical overview. It's much clearer now. So now, if we come to today, today Malta has two official languages, Maltese and English. But of course, it hasn't always been like that. So, when was Maltese recognized as an official language? And given the importance of this Italian heritage that you mentioned, why is Italian not also recognized as an official language?
So, first of all, I need to specify that although both Maltese and English are official, the national language is Maltese.
What is the difference between an official language and a national language?
According to the constitution, Maltese overrules even in the law courts, for example. Definitely in parliament, everything is done in Maltese. But even in the law courts, the binding version of the law is the one in Maltese. And for all official purposes, Maltese is used by government, by the church, by the various
Okay.
institutions and so on. So it's the symbol of identity. It was recognized for the first time in 1934. So we were still under British domination because Malta became independent in 1964. And obviously at that time, the British government wanted to install English as the main language or the only language officially. But there was a struggle between the pro-Italianites, the pro-British, and eventually Maltese emerged as the successful symbol of Maltese nationality.
Okay, so that must be the time of the language dispute, which I read about, which occurred in Malta in the 19th century, and I read until the mid 20th century. It was called the language question. So, you'll have to correct me. I'll try to say it in Maltese. Quistioni ta lingua.
Perfect, perfect.
Oh,
Yes.
good. So, what was this language dispute about? You already talked a bit about it.
It's a very interesting case of, as they say in Italian, tra due che si litigano, il terzo gode. When two fight, a third one comes out successful. So,
And that was Maltese, right?
exactly, as described by our historian Henry Frendo, it's a unique example of the case in which trilingualism became a battleground for the successful quest of a national identity. So, Maltese nationalism, we're talking here about 120 years ago now, where we had a paradox, a triple paradox, the championing of Italian as a non-Maltese national language of great cultural relevance, because, of course, the culture carried by Italian was much greater at that time than the one carried by Maltese. On the other hand, you had the active promotion of English by the imperial power, but the gradual emergence of Maltese was pushed by the Maltese political parties. which had already were already publishing newspapers in Maltese, for example. And they had lawyers in the lead and priests, even from the Catholic Church. At that time, priests could be politicians. And they were also pushing for the recognition of Maltese as an official language. So this is how then in 1934, finally, the Maltese were granted the official status of their language.
Now, Malta being a multilingual country, I'm wondering how many native speakers of Maltese are there in Malta today?
Right. So according to the latest national census, which took place in 2021, there are about 350,000 people speaking Maltese as a first language. In fact, from the whole Maltese population, 91% declare Maltese to be their main language. If we're talking about people over the age of 10, later on, maybe we'll talk about the situation with children, which is a bit different.
Yeah, we'll talk about it maybe a bit later. Okay, thank you. Now, could you give us a few examples of how the Italian influence and the Arabic influence are intertwined in the Maltese language?
Sure. For example, first of all, we have about 40% of the language, which is of Arabic origin, and 50, about 50% of Italian origin, and a small percentage of about 6% or so of English origin. Different studies have ended up with slightly different percentages, but they don't vary that much. So, for example, grammar words like prepositions, the article, verb morphology is Semitic. So, we have a root system whereby you have three or four consonants on the basis of which we can formulate verbs, nouns, participles, and so on. To give one example, from the consonants k, t, b, we have the verb kitep, to write. And then on that basis, then the language produces the noun kitip, the noun ktip. So kitip is writer, ktip is book, kitba writing, and the past participle mektup, written.
This makes me think of Turkish because I learned Turkish and there are many Arabic words as well in Turkish. And actually, we have in Turkish kitap, which means book, so very close to what you're saying, and mektup, which means letter. So very close to what you're saying. Interesting.
Now that's the Arabic part of the verb system. In parallel with it, we have the non-Arabic verbal system, which we call the stem system. So the stem is that part of the word which appears in all the words within the same lexical family. For instance, educa, and therefore the verb educa, which means to educate. And then you have education, educazioni. The adjectives educat, maleducat. The thing is, in Maltese, there is no infinitive form for either the Semitic or the non-Semitic verbs. And to look up a verb in the dictionary, the meaning of a verb in the dictionary, you have to know what we call the mamma, which is the third person, masculine singular, of the verb in the past. So for learners, this is quite difficult at first until they get used to this mamma system.
Does mama actually means mum, mummy, or
Yes, mother, yes. Yes. The irony is that we use the third person masculine, although it's called the mama, but you have to refer to what the man has done.
Is there any chance that this might change in the future, in this post-Me Too world that we're in,
We've had that discussion, but it's too complicated. I think there's enough confusion already.
And it's really, the thing is it's really the stem of the language, so it's more difficult to change, I guess, than a lexical thing. It's really the deep
No, yes,
grammar.
it's because it's the structure, it's the grammar, so.
I understand. Now we've talked about the grammar and this dual verbal system that you have. That is very, I don't know, astonishing, I think, for, you know, for non-native speakers. And then there is also the vocabulary, which is related to Italian and to a lesser extent to English. And also there are around 30 to 40% of words that come from Arabic, words of really everyday life, very concrete words of everyday life, tend to be of Arabic origin. Could you give us examples of Maltese words of different origins?
Yes, it's interesting that, for example, while the main religion of Malta is Catholic, we use Arabic words for example, for Lent, we say Ramadan, and for Easter, we say Eid. But then we say Knisia for church and Purchasioni for procession.
And Knisia, sorry, where does Knisia come from?
Chiesa, from Italy.
Okay, right.
And then in the kitchen, for example, we use forchetta for fork and tazza, but then we use marfa for spoon, which is a Semitic word.
Okay.
And then English vocabulary is very present in sport and technology, like goal, football, ground, computer, mouse, but they're all written in Maltese orthography.
Now, this mixed heritage also means that there are a lot of synonyms in Maltese.
Yes, indeed.
Could you give us a few examples of these, of synonyms?
Yes, I'll give you some examples of synonyms where we have an English word, an Arabic synonym, and an Italian version with the same or roughly the same meaning. So, for example, shape in English.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have amla in Semitic, forma.
Mm-hmm.
Pond, adira, lak. Sorry, to be sorry. Yisobia, yiddispiacini. To be lonely. Wahdek, solitudni. So, in fact, some of my more intelligent students, I suspect, would, who, for example, knew very well Italian or French, they would only remember the Italian version.
I'm sure I would do the same, for sure.
And they could still manage to be understood, to communicate.
But doesn't this, you know, variety of synonyms or doesn't it make it difficult for, especially for non-native speakers to learn Maltese? Because, you know, for one concept, you have to learn three words.
Well, they don't have to learn all three at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my experience as a teacher of Maltese as a foreign language, it's more the grammar, I think, which is hard than the lexis. For example, for the plural, it's not as simple as in English. You add an S and you've got plural. For each word, you have to learn its plural.
Each word has a different plural?
Each word, yes.
My God. Okay.
I mean, there are groups of words, let's say, which take the same form, but you wouldn't know which one it is unless you studied them.
Mm-hmm.
So the plurals are very difficult. Gender is easy then, because when the word ends in a, 98% of the time it's a feminine noun or adjective.
Okay.
The rest would be masculine.
I'm wondering, since Malta is a multilingual country, which languages are spoken and taught at school in Malta?
So, Malta has had a bilingual system of education for a very long time, for decades. Since the beginning of education in Malta, like 120 years ago. And it's very unique because we use Maltese and English throughout, from the early years, even up to tertiary education at university. It's very difficult to explain how this is done, but mainly it's that the texts, most of the texts would be read and written in English, but the explanation and discussion would take place in Maltese or part of it.
So there's code switching permanently in classrooms
Yes, and this is not flip-flopping as some American scholar called it. It's I've analyzed this for my PhD at the University of Edinburgh, and it's although it is subconscious, the teachers do it very spontaneously, but there are very clear reasons when this code switching, nowadays it's called translanguaging, but the same phenomenon. So there are very clear pedagogical reasons why it happens, and it's very helpful. In fact, there is a movement in Europe to develop a system called CLIL, Content and Language Integrated Learning. It's not exactly like our system, but some scholars and pedagogues appreciate the fact that learning a subject in another language than the one you speak is very helpful. So traditionally monolingual contexts, like in, I don't know, in Britain, in Spain, in Austria, are trying to incorporate this CLIL method, which we have had for decades.
Now, since multilingualism is so widespread in Malta and is really in the fabric of the country, I wonder how many people speak Maltese, but also English and Italian. So are there many trilingual people in Malta?
So, according again, I go back to the census data so that I'm a bit official, in what I say. 85, roughly 85% of the Maltese population have self-reported to be fluently bilingual in Maltese and English. Over 90% said that Maltese is their first language, but that they are bilingual, right? And about 30% of the population say that they are trilingual with Italian, Maltese, English, and Italian.
You told me when we first met that Maltese was less spoken among children nowadays in Malta. Could you tell us a bit more about this phenomenon?
Yes, I knew this because I frequent schools and I was not surprised, but there was quite a surprise, a national surprise, because again, in this national census, a third of the children under the age of 10 claimed to have English as their main language. This is the result of globalization and the need for English to act as a lingua franca, both inside and outside of school, given the increase in non-Maltese speaking population. In the last 5 years, there's been an increase of about 150,000, compared to the 350,000 Maltese people. That's a huge number of non-Maltese speakers. And this has resulted in English in school, in primary school, since the early years. English has dominated. And so, children, a third of the children, have claimed to have English as their main language.
Now, I have an EU question. Malta joined the European Union in 2004, along with nine other countries. So we are celebrating this year the 20th anniversary of Malta's accession to the EU. What do you think has been the impact on the Maltese language of the accession of Malta to the EU? And in particular, I'm wondering what has been the impact of, of the work of our Maltese colleagues here in the EU institutions, who translated into Maltese and who are still translating into Maltese the EU legislation and other EU texts.
Yes, in my opinion, the fact that Maltese became an official language of the EU was crucial in the development of the language. First of all, it halted a shift towards English at that time, already 20 to 30 years ago. We were worried that some parents were shifting the home language to English because they argued that Maltese had no relevance outside Malta. But once Maltese became relevant, thanks to the EU, this provided jobs for translators, for interpreters, and also for teachers of Maltese to some extent. The Consiglio Nazionale Talils in Malti, the National Council, Language Council, was established, orthographic rules were revised, and Lexis was researched intensively. So the overall impact on Maltese, in my opinion, was very positive because Maltese now had wider viability and a huge linguistic enrichment. I mentioned that I worked as a translator for a few years at the council, so I know, I have been witness to how we had to expand the use of Maltese to all the different areas. For example, I remember once I had a text about the parts of an aeroplane, which otherwise no one would have bothered to explain in Maltese, right? But that was an opportunity to not invent words, but re sort of develop what already existed and expand its viability, basically.
Well, Antoinette, I would like to thank you again for finding the time to answer my questions on the Maltese language. So you are a professor of applied linguistics at the University of Malta, and as we said, you worked as a translator in the council. Thanks again for finding the time to tell us all about these really fascinating facts about Maltese. Thank you
Thank
very
you, my
much.
pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
To conclude this episode on the Maltese language, let's listen to a song written by Simon Bartolo, who's a translator in the Maltese department in Digi Translation, and who's also the author of novels, theatre plays, and songs in Maltese. This was DGT Radio with Antoinette Camilleri, Professor of Applied Linguistics at the University of Malta. You heard the song Ich Cimiterio by the Maltese band Brodu. The poem, written by Adrian Grima, was read by Stephanie Abbott. The song, written by our colleague Simon Bartolo, is called Tifkirit. It is performed by Amber and Mary Rose Malia. Thank you for listening.